This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
TJ Watt here. How would you categorize your role?
TJ Watt with the trifecta.
As an outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense for the Pittsburgh Steelers, you have to be a playmaker.
TJ Watt got a piece of that ball.
Earlier on the show, Pro Football Hall of Famer Dick Butkus, Fox Sports rules analyst Dean Blandino. Coming up, executive producer of the Earning It podcast, Jane Skinner Goodell, plus actor C. Thomas Howell. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. First hour, Dick Butkus was on the show, and he watched the Bears game last night. Just to sum it up, he was, what's the word for it? Pissed. That's the word for it.
Yeah.
Did he curse a couple times, Dick Butkus, when he was on?
He did.
Oh, that's
he
the greatest. And we talked about the Miller Lite commercials from back in the day.
He was very angry.
And also, I don't want to give too much away because I want you to go to our YouTube page if you missed it, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. I think the biggest piece of news that he gave us is that he was in the running for an offshoot.
A MacGyver, like a spinoff of MacGyver,
yeah. Starring Dick Butkus.
Yeah, that was huge.
How did that not happen?
Seems like a misstep.
Dean Blandino, former head of NFL refs, now Fox rules analyst, was on the program. A spirited conversation here based on the way the Monday Night Football game wrapped up last night. If you missed any of that, go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. The film The Outsiders, which is came out in 1983. Oh, my God. So that movie's closing in on 40 years old. It's out on 4K and digital today, and talking about that movie that people love so much, C. Thomas Howell will be on this program coming up shortly. But we turn right now to the phone lines right now, our guest phone line right now on the Rich Eisen Show. There's a new show coming out produced by NBC and NFL Films, a television series called Earning It, the NFL's Forward Progress, which I don't believe is about the rescinding of the emphasis of the taunting rule, unfortunately. Fortunately, what it is making sure everybody understands about what's called being called Breaking the Grass Ceiling. It's a groundbreaking new podcast featuring the stories of women in the NFL. It's hosted by the NFL's Senior Director of Diversity and Inclusion, Sam Rappaport, and it is executive produced by Jane Skinner Goodell, a longtime television anchor for 20 years, and now at the forefront of the National Football League, as always, back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Jane Skinner Goodell. How are you, Jane?
Hey, Rich. It's not about the taunting rule, but it is produced by a Bears fan. So,
don't
get me in trouble by asking me my opinion about last night.
Okay, so do you at least turn to who might ever be next to you on the couch or in that famous Barca lounger that I saw on a Zoom years ago and say, what gives? Does that ever happen for you?
Let's just say, Jane, we have a family group text. I grew up in Chicago, as you know. We have a family group text going that the commish is on, so he hears it. He hears it.
Okay.
I don't need to say a word.
You let the rest of the text exchange pick it up
you
the
know,
chain
and
of
know
command.
You know who is just most savage on the text is my 83-year-old mom, biggest Bears fan you'll ever meet.
Okay.
So, she can lay it down.
Okay. Do you want to let us know what she texted to the group last night?
It was all clean.
Okay, good. Very good. It is a family show.
But she loves her Bears very much.
Very good. Okay, so let's talk about this pod that dropped, as the kids say, today. Why and what would you like people to know about it?
Well, you know, it's actually, I'm producing a podcast and a TV series, which is going to be on Peacock, which you're familiar with. That's coming in January.
Very good.
But the idea is, there's a ton of football in both the podcast and the series, but they're really about change. And so, as you said, I worked in, you know, as a TV reporter for 20 years, and I guess I know a good story or I love a good story. And the concept, if I had told you and Chris 5 or 6 years ago that there would be at the Super Bowl 2021, that there would be a female official on the field, there would be two female coaches who are on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Super Bowl winning team, you probably would have looked at me like I had three heads. Mm-hmm. So the pace of change of bringing women into the most male dominated sport in the world has been just so rapid. And within 5 years' time, there, you know, I think this year where there are six full-time female coaches. I think this summer there were 12 in some interns and training camps. And it's remarkable to me. So what I really wanted to do is just kind of chronicle it and talk a lot, really honestly, about how that idea came about, first of all, and how that change actually happens. You know, you can't just wave a magic wand and say, hey, let's have some diversity and inclusion. There's, you know, it's a lot of challenges, but there are a ton of people that we talk to, a lot of head coaches, players, mm-hmm. who have been very instrumental in the change. And I think people might be surprised to kind of hear the story about how it has all happened and how it's playing out and how it's just beginning.
Okay, who'd you have on? Who'd you get to... as guests,
well,
here and as part of the show.
Episode one is Roger Goodell.
I've heard of him. Okay.
great booking. We had to make an episode two. It's kind of like episode 1B, uh-huh. because he sat with Sam Rappaport, the host, whose idea this all was, by the way. She created the pipeline for women, which is why she's hosting this, and she's fantastic. She played professional women's tackle football. She was a quarterback, so she knows the game better than you, Rich, I might even say. She is a better athlete. She could run.
Run, Sam, run. I like that. Okay.
Anyhow, he sat with her. It was a 30-minute interview window, and he sat with her for 2 hours. They talked a ton about football. They talked a ton about the importance of diverse voices and how players and coaches and teams, organizations just want to win, mm-hmm. and they don't care what you look like, or what gender you are, what ethnicity, race, where you were born, where you came from. If you can help me win and teach me ways to do that, I'm all in. So we talked to him. We talked to Kevin Stefanski of the Browns, Ron Rivera, Washington football team. Sean McDermott at the Bills is great. His daughter dressed up as a female coach for Halloween. Mm-hmm. And Billie Jean King came on, which was incredible because she and Bruce Arians was on too, and she and Bruce have a mutual admiration society. And she was fantastic just about talking about how you have to be pragmatic. If you want to change something, you know, and somebody says no or stands in your way or doesn't believe in it, move on, because you are going to find someone. And in this case, there are men, right, that have to be involved and are involved and are very involved, and find the ones who want to help you make the change. And you can't waste your time worrying about the ones who don't. And then the last episode, which I don't want to give it away, but okay. We're going to do an all-access pass to the making of the Super Bowl halftime show. It's executive produced by a woman. Mm-hmm. And we have a special guest, mystery guest, who's mm-hmm. going to take us, be like our halftime historian, kind of take us through the history in audio format of halftime, which will be super fun.
Earning It, again, is the name of this podcast, and then a five-part series coming to NBC and coming to Peacock in January, which is good. Okay.
And I'm impressed because most people say earning with a G, but Rich, you're so bright that you get it. It's earning.
Well, it's earning. An apostrophe, Jane. I mean, you know, I mean, you understand what a lead pipe wielding professional broadcaster and host sounds like, you know, so you would know that. I mean, it says earning it right here. Okay. And so what do you want people to know out of this thing? I mean, like literally, because we do hear about diversity, we hear about inclusivity. And clearly, you know, as you called it, it's a male-dominated sport. What do you want people to get out of this?
I think the most important thing is we're not making – this is a really big deal for me to say. We're not making female content for women. We are making content that mm-hmm. is for everyone. You know, it's obviously for football fans because we've got head coaches, players, the commish coming on – ton of football. But even if you're not a football fan, it's really a story. We're talking about a story about change in 2021 and how that plays out and how you navigate obstacles. It's a story about perseverance, resilience. Sam is very big on going there and asking the questions. When you're Sarah Thomas, she said to her, what is the worst thing that people have said to you on the field? And they give strategies, which I think is really helpful for, like, think about your kids as they're navigating a world with social media and there's you know, just negativity out there. And they all give strategies for how do you deal with that and how do you deal with obstacles in your way and, you know, be resilient. So I think at the end of the day, it's the lessons that are offered here are for kind of all generations and also for other industries. If there are, you know, other industries out there that are trying to, you know, kind of change the makeup of how they do things and bring in other points of view. It's a pretty interesting experiment that the NFL has done and done brilliantly. It's not without its challenges, and they're still in the process of it. It's only 5 years in, so I guess that's a lot that okay. I want people to take from it.
But. Well, I mean, I listened to the first episode, Jane, on the way down to work today. Can you tell Sam Rappaport for me, you know, that should I be concerned that she wants my host chair? Cause you know, I'm not saying I need to be in charge of diversity inclusion, you know, it should go both ways. You know what I mean? Like, cause she did she make the commissioner cry? Did she pull some sort of like, you know, Roy Firestone moment on him?
She didn't mean to, but he did start to cry. I think she felt bad. But then, you know, she's like you and I. She's a real broadcaster, and she said, ooh, I think that's a tease. We made the commissioner cry.
Okay, so that actually happened. All right, in episode one. Very good. Okay, Jane, I really appreciate the time. Good luck with this pod, and people can get it all where podcasts are acquired now, and then look in January for the five-part series right here on Peacock, correct?
Yeah, Peacock, so.
Okay. Very
Thanks,
good.
Rich.
No, you got it. Anything else I need to know? What's going on? What are you guys binge watching? What is the commissioner of the National Football League and his wife binge watch? Do you have time for that sort of thing? What do you
watch? We rewatch and rewatch and rewatch NFL football games.
Are you serious? Come
on. That is the rule in our house. There's no other television allowed.
There's no Game of Thrones. There's no Succession. The commissioner's not watching Succession.
We have been trying a little Ted Lasso, a little Succession, just kind of your typical ones. But I'm not kidding you. When you know what he's like, it's all football all the time. So as my dad said when Roger asked him if he could marry me, I've prepared her well for this life.
Okay, very good. Jane Skinner Goodell, thanks very much. I look forward for everybody else catching the podcast, Earning It, as I said correctly. It's called Earning It. Go get it. We're all podcasts are required right now. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Rich.
You
Bye,
got
Chris.
It. You got it. There you go. There's Jane Skinner Goodell right there saying goodbye to you.
Well, we met. We had a great time at the Super Bowl.
That's true.
Sweet.
That's true.
In Minneapolis.
She must not hear your thoughts on Deflategate.
Clearly.
Ever.
She must agree with me.
Chris, I'm going to walk here. Shut up, okay? Careful.
I'm going
to
walk.
All right. It's your problem.
What, are you trying to tell us something?
No, I'm not telling you anything. It's all good. It's all good. Okay. Let's take a break, and we'll come back, and C. Thomas Howell is going to join us. This is pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
By the way, before we take a break, real quick, do you know he was in E.T.? Are you aware of that?
Really?
Yes.
I was not aware of that.
He was in E.T. I think him performing well in E.T., I think he was Henry Thomas's older brother.
All right, hold on.
In E.T., I bet you that's what put him on Coppola's radar screen.
He was Tom Howell back then.
So Tom Howell in E.T., the extraterrestrial, in 1982.
His first gig.
And then The Outsiders in 83.
Jeez.
Pony Boy Curtis.
How about that? Spielberg and Coppola right out of the gate.
Back to back.
How about them apples?
That is amazing.
You're thinking, does life get any better than this?
Well, here's what you're going to love. Here's what you're going to love. We have a special... a celebrity true or false just on The Outsiders coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had Rob Lowe here previously saying that Tom Cruise was the biggest badass of all time. And that's where he learned that Cruise just shortens the name of all of his movies to just one word in the title.
It's the greatest thing of all time.
Talking about, you know, instead of all the right moves, when I was making moves, right?
Yeah. Back on the set of moves.
Fantastic. All right, let's take a break. See Thomas Howell when we come back here on the Rich Eisen Show and your phone calls. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. I would love to see that text exchange with Jane Skinner's Goodell's Bears family and friends last night. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
When we heard, hey, do you want to have C. Thomas Howell
yes.
on? That was it.
That was it. Yes.
Right. And then it's just like, hey, to support the fact that The Outsiders, made in 1983, is available today on 4K disc and digital today, the answer was yes. And we're thrilled to have here on the Rich Eisen Show, C. Thomas Howell on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. How are you, C. Thomas Howell?
Rich, how are you? My man, call me Tommy, please.
Okay, Tommy.
Tommy.
I was going to ask you that. Literally, it's the first question.
It's just torture having a name. Nobody knows what the hell to call you.
Well, what does the C stand for?
Christopher.
All right, Christopher Thomas Howell.
But it's a union thing. My father and I have the same name, and we're both in the same union. And as a young age, instead of being a junior, he tagged me with a C. And
I got it.
I didn't have a whole lot to say in it. But,
okay.
You know, nobody's ever called me C.
Okay.
And I've always been called Tommy.
All right, Tommy. We have established all that. Those are the ground rules for the rest of this conversation. I love it. Before we get to The Outsiders, you were in E.T. at how old were you in E.T.?
About 13 when I did that.
Gosh, so what was that's your first movie? You're 13-year-old on the set with Spielberg and a Reese's Pieces eating extraterrestrial and a flying bike and all that stuff that ended up happening. What was that like for you back in the day?
First of all, you have to understand my father is a stunt coordinator and was a stuntman his whole life. He's still active and working. So I grew up on sets and it wasn't. It wasn't a foreign thing for me when I started to audition and go in and meet these type of people. And also, Rich, you have to understand that my father was a professional bull rider for 12 years. So I grew up with a cowboy background. I was, you know, planning on being a cowboy myself.
Mm-hmm.
So pressure to me back then was, you know, I was roping and getting on bulls, going in and meeting a guy talking about, you know, making money to speak was like, that's not pressure at all, you know, at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, you've got no responsibilities. I had no bills. I had no worries. It was just immense fun. And the only reason I think I got the job was because that role was previously cast. And God knows why, but Spielberg wanted that character to smoke a cigarette in a scene. And the person they cast was a Mormon kid, and his mom was like, he's not going to smoke a cigarette. And I had the opportunity to go in the room and meet Steven. And when it got to the point about the cigarettes, my father, on the way down to the audition, had stopped by 7-Eleven, and we grabbed a couple of Marlboro packages, and I practiced lighting these cigarettes, and I pulled this crumpled cigarette out of my pocket that did a 90-degree turn, put it in my mouth, and tried to light it. And he was like, all right, kid, you got the part.
Come on. That's it.
How it went down. And I, you know, really planned on kind of doing stunts and not being an actor. But that led to me having an agent and the process of auditioning for The Outsiders, which was an enormous process. I mean, they saw every single person under the age of 20, I think, you know, under the stars. And that began. And I was able to sort of get that role. And, you know, you go, a lot of people think how great you go from Spielberg
to Coppola.
To Coppola, Rich. Yeah. But I'm here to tell you it's all downhill from there, man. It's been
Come on. Because we had Rob Lowe on a couple of years ago, and he called it his, like, college experience. Being there. Now, you were younger than college age being on the set there, right? Right, you were 15.
Oh, that, we all had a lot of firsts on that set, Rich. There was a lot of firsts for all of us. And, you know, it was a there was a real fraternity.
That's what he called
atmosphere
it.
To some degree,
right.
You know, and there was a real competitive sense because Coppola being a bit of a he was so smart and he created a real competition between the Socs and the Greasers. We would have barbecues on weekends, basketball games planned. They'd show up and get out of a limousine with their matching jumpsuits, and we'd get out of a pass van with whatever we brought from home. You know, they got leather binders. We got nothing. They stayed on the 16th, 17th floor. We were on the third and the fourth. And they just created this sense of animosity that, of course, was, you know, to some degree friendly, but trust me, when it was time to rumble, we were sticking them with a few, you know what I mean?
So, yeah. So, you know, let's hit this. Normally, you know, for these interviews with a celebrity, C. Thomas Howell, we'll ask you questions that we've read about your career personally on online or on Wikipedia or whatever, and just do celebrity true or false in that regard. But I want to do a celebrity true or false on The Outsiders. Certainly since in celebration of the 4K Ultra HD digital release of the film today. Hit it, please. We have a great production value to it as well. Hit it for C. Thomas Howell.
Celebrity, true or false?
You can't handle the truth.
Okay, there you go, right there. First one up for you on Celebrity, True or False for The Outsiders, C. Thomas Howell. The iconic film poster was supposed to be the Greasers being serious, but they're all shown laughing because Ralph Macchio made a joke about Leif Garrett standing off camera. True or false?
Very true.
Can you repeat the joke?
Real quick, I'll tell you what happened.
Sure, please.
So they have the Socs standing off because they've done a couple of shots of them.
Mm-hmm.
We're there grabbing our shots, trying to, you know, go blue steel.
Yep.
And in comes the platter of sandwiches and deli meats and all that. And they put it down, and the young person bringing that in shouts out quite loudly, "Hey, you know, this is for the talent only," which meant for the actors. Well, we go back to taking a few shots, and Leif, who wasn't in the room at that time, comes walking in and goes over to the sandwich. And Ralph blurts out quickly, "Hey, Leif, that's for the talent." And, of course, we all lost it, and they took a shot of that.
And that's
and
it.
That was the infamous poster.
Wow. So what do we make of it that Emilio Estevez still didn't crack his blue steel? What do we make of that? He just didn't. He's still he's staring down. Maybe he wanted the sandwich. Maybe Leif took one of his sandwiches. Maybe that's what that is. Wow. I
you
love that.
You never know about Emilio.
Okay, so that we already covered this, but I want to ask a little bit more for the purposes of this segment here. So it's true that during filming, the Socs were given leather-bound scripts. You were in more luxury accommodations than you. You just had paperback scripts, and you had to stay. You were on the third floor because this says ground floor of the hotel because Francis Ford Coppola wanted you guys to already hate each other for the scenes.
Yeah, no, you know, I think I've ruined our game already.
It's okay. Basically,
yeah,
he did
that's
that.
All true.
Well, what did you guys really like eventually throughout filming get jealous of the other guys for having better accommodations than you? Did that really genuinely piss you off? Did it work?
No, because you know, I mean, Rich, I mean, you know, it was like it wasn't a movie about the Socs. You know what I mean? It was like they were all parading around with their leather bound scripts. I was in front of the camera grabbing close ups. You know what I mean? It was like, sure. I didn't care at all. I had stuff to do, brother. And at that point, it was like, that's where the, you know, I wouldn't say I was mouthy, but I came from a very confident background. I mean, in 1979, 1980, 1981, I was California State all-around champion, junior rodeo. And that was what I was going to do. So, you know, I wasn't afraid to run my mouth to somebody if that started. And I was pretty quick-witted. So, you know, somebody like Leif Garrett having to listen to this little punk who's kind of, you know, not taking any guff from you know, the guy who's jamming to his own cuts in the back seat with his boombox was a pretty good thing to have to witness. So we had a real competitive sense that, you know, was very interesting. And I feel kind of bad that, you know, if at times became that, because ultimately I think everybody loved each other. But it was really set up to, you know, to some degree for us to feel that. And I think a really good director does that. And, you know, all of the best directors create an environment for their actors to go into. And I think that's why filming it in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where it was written, was epic. It took everybody out of their own comfort zone. And, you know, when you shoot a film or a TV show where you all live, there is no bonding after work. You all go back to your own lives and deal with your own stuff, and you bring all that crap with you to work the next day. Mm-hmm. But in a situation like this, we went back home together, and, you know, we were working together. And I remember Rob Lowe and Patrick Swayze, rest his soul. I did three pictures with Patrick. I did Red Dawn with him, which was epic. And we did something that probably nobody ever saw called Grandview USA with Jamie Lee Curtis. And he was like a real brother to me. A quick tale about Patrick.
Please.
My father was a stunt coordinator on a movie called Urban Cowboy.
I've heard of that.
John Travolta, about riding the bucking machine, if you guys remember, 78, 79. And Patrick Swayze's mother, Patsy Swayze, was the dance choreographer on that film. Patrick was on that set working with John a little bit with his two-step.
Come on.
And I was there riding the bucking machine to help John sort of advance along and get over the fear of it when he saw this little kid riding it, because my dad brought me down and I would ride this bucking machine. And I met Patrick when I was about, oh, I guess 11, 12 years old.
Amazing.
On the set of Urban Cowboy, was hanging out with him and his family probably 2-3 years before The Outsiders ever even came around. But and then we did three pictures together.
Travolta already had his Saturday Night Fever moment, and we know, obviously, Swayze's maneuvers from Dirty Dancing. Are you telling me that Swayze helped him with moves on Urban Cowboy?
Telling you that Swayze was a big part of teaching John that two-step with Deborah Winger in that movie. And he also, because John was beyond with the dancing. But to be really clear, Patrick stood in for John and would work with Deborah on her dancing as John, because John was advanced and ready to go. You know, he was amazing. You're not going to really teach him a lot. Mm-hmm. Once he learned the steps, he was money. But there was still a process getting Deborah there, and there's still a bit of a process just teaching John the steps, and Swayze was a big part of that.
How about that? Celebrity true or false?
Swayze was an overachiever, man. Swayze was a classic overachiever, and in the most beautiful way. I have to tell you, you know, he just, the guy wanted to play the guitar and sing, number one song. You know, and I'll tell you this is how brilliant the guy is. So, a real quick Red Dawn story.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Grey, who was in Dirty Dancing,
yes,
played Baby.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them didn't get along great, to be honest with you, on Red Dawn. In fact, Rich, there was a love scene written in Red Dawn between Swayze's character and Jennifer Grey's character. And Swayze really did not want to do it. And he offended her deeply. And it got down to the fact that when they had to go to the directors, and, you know, Milius had already worked with Swayze on Uncommon Valor, so they were pretty tight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Swayze just felt it wasn't appropriate for the film. He says it's not going to move this story forward. It's not about that. And it was a big scene for her, a lot of dialogue and a big moment. So she was really bent out of shape. And we had about 2 or 3 weeks of shooting left, And the two of them didn't really speak much. And I know she did not appreciate what he had done there, but he stuck to his guns and didn't feel it was appropriate. And I think he was right. Here you go. Cut to, right, a couple years later, she's cast first in the role as Baby in Dirty Dancing. They're searching up and down for this guy, Johnny, right, to play the role opposite her. They can't find the guy. They're looking everywhere. Could you imagine the look on her face when they finally say, guess what? We found your guy.
How about...
Oh, my Lord. You're going to love this. It's your friend, Patrick Swayze. The look on her face must have been, oh, my God, man. And what did Swayze do? He turned that crap around, man. He made an amazing movie. And everybody, that was a huge hit, that little movie.
Of course. Of course. So he put Baby in a corner before Baby was put in a corner. That's what you're saying.
You ain't lying. Oh, you ain't lying. Gosh. And, you know, he just had the ability to do that. He was just a classic overachiever, you know. You could just say, hey, I got a butterfly net. I'm going to try catching butterflies. He'd be like, well, I went to the Olympics in 68 butterfly catching.
Wow. I never got to meet Patrick Swayze. I have met Jennifer Grey out here in Los Angeles. She's a delightful person. She's as delightful person I've ever met.
You would have loved Patrick. He was a great guy.
I bet. All right. So returning to The Outsiders, Celebrity True or False, I've got a couple left here. In the Rumble scene, you were the first guy punched, and you got cold cocked. It was a real punch. True or false?
Very true story. So I'll try to answer that quickly.
Sure.
We had choreographed for about, three, 4 weeks. This extensive stunt fight, this elaborate sort of melee with a bunch of people. And I had, you know, a pretty good exchange, you know, a few judo chops and some karate kicks and whatever you do, right? So I was practicing all that stuff, getting ready to do it. We show up on the first night. It's a 3-night shoot, this whole Rumble. The first night is sort of the introduction, you know, getting us all lined up and staring each other down, bringing everybody to each other and kind of picking sides and saying, I'll take you, I take you. The next night was going to be the real beginning of the fight. The first night we get there, Rich, it's pouring rain. And we're like, what the hell are we going to do? We shoot the whole thing in the pouring rain. We come back the next night, there's no rain, but there's a fire department there with hoses, just, you know, smiles squirting us all night as we begin to rumble. The very first punch thrown was from a friend of mine named Reed Rondell. He comes from a very well-known stunt family called the Rondell family. He throws the first punch and slips in the mud and tagged me on the chin for real. And down I went as this melee took place. We cut. I go over to Francis. I'm like, Francis, you know, we got to do it again. I didn't get to do, you know, the judo chops and the flips and the rolls and all that stuff. He's like, no, it looked like you got pounded in the face and you went down in the mud. It was great. I said, yeah, that's what happened. He said, yeah, but that's what happened. Now you got Matt Dillon dragging me out of the damn thing. I never got to throw a punch. I just took one to the chin and dropped. And that's what happened to Pony Boy in the damn Rumble. That was my big shiny moment, brother.
Last one for you here. In the scene, the fountain scene where Leif Garrett attempts to drown you, Pony Boy, apparently later on after filming, the six other outsiders jokingly mocked the scene in the lobbies, the hotel that you were staying in, the lobby fountain of the hotel, trying to drown each other playfully, and the hotel removed the fountain after that. Is that a true story?
Yeah. Well, I will tell you this. That first part did happen, mm-hmm. and that fountain did disappear. Now, why, I don't know. Was it connected? It makes for a good story, Rich.
Well, the writer of the S.E. Hinton is the person who told this story, that the hotel had the fountain removed within weeks because they didn't want
you. That's hilarious. And let me tell you one thing I learned. Do not mess with S.E. Hinton, period. That's it. What a great woman she was. And imagine this, writing this thing when you're 17 years old in high school like she did.
Mm-hmm. So basically, I guess made you learn something from Celebrity True or False based on this film.
You did.
How about that? Because Rob Lowe also said he told us he turned 18 during filming and you totally hazed him in his hotel room. Like you saran wrapped his toilet.
I think we did. We did some good stuff to him. It was a prank oriented set. A lot of things happened. You know, I do recall sort of taking a fire hydrant and unscrewing the eyepiece that you look through your, you know, to see who's on the other side. And for some reason,
yes.
In this hotel, you could unscrew it from the outside. And I just pumped a bunch of, you know, extinguisher smoke into his room and phoned him and said there was a fire. And, man, he came jetting downstairs with his camera and in his skivvies and nothing else. And we had a pretty good laugh at that. But they got to me, too. They all pranked me pretty good. I remember one time I went home at 4 in the morning and everything in my room was turned upside down. My bed, everything, upside down. It was horrible. I wanted to go to sleep so bad. And I had to go get another room for the day for them to fix my room. No. Things like that were happening all the time.
Last
you
one.
Know, back then, you could do that stuff, Rich. Now,
I guess so.
Now I sit in the corner. I'm quiet. I can't say anything, man. You used to maybe be able to say something inappropriate occasionally for a laugh. Now, man, you are you know, on your best behavior. There is no jokes anymore, brother.
Last one for you. You want to ask it, T.J. Jefferson, Rich Eisen, social media grand race?
Sure, I'll do that.
Go for it.
Hey, Tommy, I just want to say I'm loving this interview. The Outsiders, Red Dawn, two of my favorite movies. I couldn't even tell you how much I watch those two flicks. But
awesome.
I'm reading that Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Cam Neely. Were they in the movie with you guys as well, or is that a false?
Uncredited socias. Is that true? That's false?
That's false, yeah.
Okay.
That's what
we got a false
Flea of Red Hot Chili Peppers and the great Cam Neely.
They have it in IMDb.
I think Cam Neely was in Kingpin, though. I think
Neely was in
Dumb and Dumber. Okay, that's very good. Hey, man, C. Thomas Howell, this has been great.
Rich, I'm a big fan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Right back at you, man. Congrats on everything that's gone on in your career, and I appreciate you going down memory lane with me here. Appreciate it.
Can't wait to meet you someday, man. Keep at it.
Okay, Tommy, there you go. That's C. Thomas Howell right there on the Rich Eisen Show. The Outsiders, go get it. I mean, those photographs are unbelievable that we just were popping on the screen right there. Unbelievable. Diane Lane was in it, too.
Yeah, yes.
And Diane Lane is just one of my favorites of all time. All of them. Matt Dillon.
Emilio!
Didn't we say Ralph Macchio just turned 60 the other day?
Yeah.
60.
Wow. 60. Oh,
gosh. Look how young they are on the screen, Matt Dillon, too.
I love this. I mean, I read this book. I think the first time I read it, I was 11. Probably read The Outsiders at least 5 times. Couldn't tell you how many times I've watched that movie. I watched it like 2 weeks ago.
That was fun. That was fun. Fun. All right, we'll tell you who's on the rest of the week when we come back. Phone calls, 844-204-RICH and Brockman. You know, you've been looking at the Twitter feed over the last 20, 40 minutes that we've been interviewing folks. Looks like you're interested in something over there. We'll hit you on that subject when we come back right here on The Rich Eisen Show.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
So Woj just sent out a tweet, okay, about the Darren Williams and Frank Gore are fighting.
Oh yeah,
On Jake Paul, they're on the undercard of Jake Paul. Who's Jake Paul fighting? That one I don't know.
Tommy Fury, which
Tommy Fury. Okay,
Tyson Fury's brother.
Yeah, right. Okay, Tommy Fury. All right, I know Tommy.
Tommy.
And Chris Mannix said you have no idea who those people are. And Woj, the great response, telling Mannix that he had him on mute. And we said, I think he would definitely know who Frank Gore is, right?
Yeah.
And he wrote, I think he was talking about the two guys leading the card, Woj writes. I vaguely know the Jake Paul story, and I definitely know Frank Gore.
All right, there you go. He answered the question.
Yeah. Woj is on it, man. I mean, he's accurate. He's even being accurate on his, just to make sure that everyone understands the joke, is that he was muting Mannix, which he doesn't.
Which is a funny joke.
I love Woj.
That's hilarious.
Woj's wordplay during an NBA draft is truly, that should be part of English classes everywhere, is how he's not allowed to tip the picks, but the words that he uses for drafting the synonyms that he uses for drafting. Targeting this player.
I don't know.
Has an affinity for this player.
Yeah.
All it's just so great.
Zeroing in on.
One
year I wrote them all down.
Enamored with.
Yeah, it's great.
That's why I like to stay off.
Enamored with. It's just, it should be taught in English classes.
Yeah.
I like to stay off of Twitter during that. I don't want to be tipped off. Like,
no,
I want the, just give it to me.
Exactly know? Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I get it. So our friends at Mercedes-Benz and the Sprinters and the Sprinter vans and the vans that in general for them, they are excited when I ask you this question and you don't respond to it. Okay. I've had talks with them.
They don't want us to chime
They
in.
Don't want you
but We to have dreams.
Yeah, I have lots of
answer,
dreams.
Answer, okay.
And we I love all Mercedes.
We all have dreams, okay?
What a Benzo.
We all have dreams.
One of them is a Benzo.
But it's a rhetorical question. When was the last time you thought about your dreams? You understand?
Okay. I do.
It's a rhetorical question because a lot of people, sometimes we go about our business too much and we don't think about our dreams enough. And Mercedes-Benz vans, the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter folks are telling everybody that there is a premium choice for you to just go live your dream, to go out and live the van life, to go out, throw caution to the wind and say, you know what? There's so much going on in my life. I'm actually going to hop in a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van that is totally customized. So you can expect innovative safety features like crosswind assist and blind spot assist. You can expect amazing performance and reliability with an MBUX voice command system, a 5-star dealer network, and an available gas engine. And just say, you know what? I do want to go see every single mountain in this world. I do want to go actually build a mountain cabin with somebody. I actually do want to go out and start my own business, by the way.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a dream about business. Maybe you do want to go see every national park site in the United States. So that's why you're not supposed to answer the question.
Oh, okay.
Again, I've talked to the Mercedes-Benz folks.
Can I ask a question now?
So head to the Mercedes-Benz van dealership and get that Sprinter and tell them your dream sent you. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Yes, now you may you may say something.
Did you really speak to the Benz
people? Yes, I did.
Okay. And they brought that up? That was a point of...
I did.
That was a note? That was a bullet point?
Is it like Woj pretending to know who Frank Gore is?
Yeah. No, I literally... Excuse
you
me.
Really, you
know,
ask
you guys them? Think you guys think when I walk out of here that I don't do anything for this show. You don't.
Yeah,
think,
we go. I think you go right home and
exactly.
nap until the next morning.
Pretty
that's
much. Or I'm the best dad ever. You know, I've got a lot of plates spinning. I'm spinning plates. You don't think like I'm all about this.
I think you get chauffeured
home. I don't
think
anyone's disputing that.
Yeah. So am I creating a false controversy? Is that what you're saying?
Perhaps.
I just don't know about this Mercedes really. Like
I spoke to them. I'm Zoomed with them. I'm.
And you brought up specifically.
You know what I? You know
and they're bringing us up.
They know who we are.
No, I'm bringing you up.
Oh, then why'd you say something?
Then why would you throw us under the bus?
Because I
want to
make
that.
Sure we're all good.
I'm saying though, but like you didn't have to like.
You're throwing us under.
I'm not
the Mercedes van.
Sprinter. A premium.
Yeah.
Sprinter bus. Van.
No, I want to make sure that again, because I don't just take it for granted that a brand like Mercedes-Benz is like, yeah, we'll put our brand on your show. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's very great.
Right, and I don't take it for granted. So I want to make sure that when I talk about their product, that I'm talking about, as they say in the Los Angeles Hollywood world, the beats. I want them, you know, they have the beats of the story that they want me to tell. And if I'm like, say, hey, you know, when was the last time you thought about your dream? And one of you two stunads chimes in, last night. It's like, no, like that might not be what they're looking for, unless they want the levity and the comedy associated with their
that's kind
very
of
serious message that they'd like to get across.
That's kind of what we were thinking.
Does that,
you know,
so.
I mean, I get it. What did they say?
I mean, did they specifically say no, though?
They asked me if I could get rid of you people. Wow. And it got really awkward fast.
I bet, yeah.
No.
I'm starting to sweat right now.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Rich, we're an hour and 8 minutes until Odell Beckham could potentially clear waivers.
And so Jordan Schultz on Twitter, he is an NFL media reporter. He's saying that Odell is targeting, once he gets through waivers,
prioritize.
And he's lighting up all the candles right now to make sure that he's not getting picked up on waivers. I don't think he's going to get picked up.
Not for seven.
I don't think so either. Not for $7.25 million.
So he wants to go play for the Packers. And I say to him, great choice, sir. Mm-hmm. Great choice. And I hope the Packers are saying yes to that. Come on now. He can't have 13. That's Alan Lazard's. Let's figure out what else. What do you wear in college? Was he 13 in college still?
Good question. I don't know.
I don't know that off the top of my head. I think it was a single digit in college, wasn't he?
I feel like it was. He wore 3.
Yeah. Who's number 3? Is there a 3? Because if it's Kurt Benkert, he's going to have to cough that one up. All due respect. You know what I'm saying?
You couldn't change your number right now, right? Because then you'd have to pay for your
jersey. No, but the jersey's not already. There's no 13 in Green Bay.
There's no 3 on Green Bay.
There we go.
No 3.
All right, so the number's available.
Let's go.
I don't want to see that.
Well.
Yeah, because that's a Cowboy fan talking right there. Let's go. Let's go. And this whole bit, like, obviously you need to play within a construct and all that. And he understands a construct and what have you. But who would be better if the play breaks down and Davante Adams is covered and Rodgers is
or
come on.
Hey, Odell.
Come on.
Run a go route.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go. I want to see that. I want to see Aaron Rodgers. I want to see Odell. I want to see Odell standing in front of the hole that he punched in the wall in the visitors' locker room with the Giants loss that time.
That's probably been patched over.
I'm sure it has been. I want to see it. I want to see it all. Let's go. On tomorrow's show, scheduled guest, just added. George Kittle, one of our favorites.
Hey!
Yeah, it's delightful. And in studio, Bill Pullman, the actor Bill Pullman. When I mentioned Bill Pullman to my wife, she's like, while you were sleeping, I mentioned Bill Pullman to you guys. You're like Independence Day or Spaceballs, right?
Spaceballs,
yeah. Susie does Spaceballs, too. She loves Mel Brooks movies. And we've got, I can't wait to chat with him. That is going to be a total blast.
Love it.
Bill Pullman in studio and also with you. Chris.
Hey, Rich.
And guys, just don't stare at me. Okay? I think you're taunting me when you're looking at me. That's what we've established. Okay? You guys are freaking me out. Jay, that's just the way you always look at me. I understand. Don't. You guys are taunting me, and it's making me uncomfortable. And that's an odd way to end the show.